Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. So Web3 has come a long way, even in our 2 years of existence as a podcast, but mass adoption is still the holy grail. But for all the headlines and hype, real-world use cases are what matter most. So how do we move from speculation to solutions that everyday users and enterprises actually care about? Today's guest has been answering that question for years. We're joined by Anthony Day, Marketing Director of VeChain and host of Blockchain Won't Save the World. With a background advising Fortune 500 companies on strategy and digital transformation, he's been helping scale Web3 from pilot projects to production across industries like supply chain, energy, healthcare, and sustainability. We'll dive into what's holding Web3 back, what's pushing it forward, and what it takes to bridge the gap between blockchain ideals and real-world impact. Anthony Day, welcome to Untangling Web3.
Hey, Alec, thank you so much. Hey, Jack, long-time listener, first-time caller. Very happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the show and excited to talk more about what I am doing next.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is high praise coming from you. We see you on LinkedIn all the time. It's an absolute pleasure to have a hero like you in the Web3 space on Untangling Web3. And first of all, congratulations on the new role. I mentioned it in the intro, but this is huge. You've got the VeChain merch on. Like, VeChain's obviously an OG. We are very closely related to VeChain, as people know. Like, it's absolutely epic to have you at VeChain. And we're going to talk about it a bit later, but it's very exciting to have you on the podcast as well.
That's high praise. Thank you so much, guys. It's been maybe a long time coming. I've known Antonio, CTO of VeChain, for a very long time. We worked together at Deloitte, as have a number of the other VFAM. Kind of, we've crossed paths over the years. I've known Sunny for a number of years as well. Highly respected, incredibly smart guy, brilliant vision. And from a why perspective, if you look at VeChain today, they are delivering real applications that humans and actual users are using every day. And I think that's an interesting challenge. I think that's an interesting proof that the technology is working, that the ecosystem's working, and I want to be a part of that. So here I am.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Anthony. I mean, it's super exciting time for obviously you guys and VeChain, and you know, there's a lot happening in the space, but I think, yeah, we've had Antonio on before, we've had Sunny on before, you know, two of our most engaging and impressive speakers, and I'm really glad we can kind of complete the set now, now that you're at VeChain. But yeah, I know on a personal note, I think, you know, this is quite a bit of a fanboy moment, because I think your podcast was probably the first time that I ever heard anyone talking about blockchain on a podcast, right? So on Blockchain Won't Save the World, right? And that's been going for a very, very, very long time now. So that puts you in a position of essentially one of the Web3 OGs in the space, in my mind, especially when it comes to, you know, talking intelligibly about these things. So, you know, having seen everything since like 2016 or whenever you started, what's that been like just as a journey, and what kind of have you seen change in the industry in that time?
Yeah, I feel like I do not deserve OG credentials when I hear someone like Sunny, who's been working in and around decentralized technology since 2011, or, you know, guys who were early into Bitcoin in 2009, 2010, and so on. It's like, that's a good 6-7 years, even before I had considered it. I came from a traditional technology background. I was working for large organizations, banks, consumer goods companies, insurance companies, life sciences companies on building innovative consumer-facing technology. That's how I started. And through Deloitte and working with Antonio, transitioned into working in blockchain. And that feels like a really, really long time ago. You know, the main technologies available at that time were Ethereum, Hyperledger Fabric, Quorum, Corda. There was no layer two infrastructure. Yeah. There were no app chains. Polkadot was just getting started. So the interoperability narrative, you know, had only just started going from the, you know, decentralize everything, chain maximalism of Ethereum to, no, actually what we want is an interconnected network of decentralized applications that provide all the benefits of Web3, of self-sovereignty, transparency, programmability, sensor resistance, all the stuff that, you know, you hear still people talking about every week, every day. And I found myself in that place, and, you know, fast forward 8-9 years, we're still trying to talk about the same values. The tooling has got better. The infrastructure has got better. we've still sort of only just started to broach the final technical paradigm around Web3, which is privacy, which I spent the last two and a half years of my career working on with Midnight. And finally, we now have what I would call regulatory acceptance in the United States. We have an important large nation state. And this is not to discredit any of the work that Switzerland, UAE, Hong Kong, France have been focusing on in terms of driving forward the Web3 agenda in their nations, right? It's been a very, very long time. Switzerland's been at this for 10 years. The effort that those nations have made towards making it easy for founders to establish, making it easy for projects to be regulated and banked. But with the US, largest financial system in the world, one of the largest trade counterparties in the world, when they say, we want this to become the crypto capital of the world, that changes the game. And that takes us away from being niche technology or a shadow industry to being front and center. And that and privacy, I think, is the final unlock for us to see mainstream application usage, widespread adoption, transformation of financial services, and seeing tokenization appear in everyday life. So that's where we are today. That's a short whistle-stop tour through where we were and where we are. It has never been a more exciting time to be in Web3. And at the same time, it has never been boring the entire time along the way either. So it's a good place and a good time.
Thanks for that summary of like the last 8 years of your career. I think to think of where we were 3 years ago with the current administration, it is a complete 180. I don't think many people would have predicted how revolutionary it would be to have the US kind of a fan of this on side with this stuff. I think one of the things that's really kind of, we've always been talking about noise and there's so much complexity, but that is just one thing, right? When people think about the US turnaround, it's specifically around Bitcoin in a lot of ways anyway. I think in the concrete ways, mostly, I would say. And that when you talk about roll-ups, layer twos, like the things that's changed over the last 8 to 10 years have been the number of chains. Every single project now, it seems, has to have a chain. Even like an application has to have a chain, a token, everything underneath. What, you know, that's one of my bugbears with this space. But what is like some of the, you must get this question all the time, what are some of the reasons that we're not seeing mainstream Web3 adoption right now?
I'm going to take a couple of the things you said there because I really want to explore a couple of them because I think it's important. The difference between does every project need to have its own chain or does every project need to have its own token, right? I think that's super important. And then also, what is the implication or what has been the impact on the industry of a less than positive regulatory environment in a number of jurisdictions? I'll take the second one first because it's at a higher level. I've worked every project, every protocol I've worked for over the last few years has been second guessing what regulators, and in particular the SEC, will do in response to go-to-market activity, partnerships, launches, publications, marketing. And the implication of that is if you're worried that you're going to get a Wells notice or a cease and desist or something through your door, that halts the entire project. And so what you end up doing is having a lot of meetings with lawyers, a lot of reviews of content, a lot of hesitancy around growth activity. You push more of the activity to the community and the foundations take less front and center roles. And you can see that difference if you look at particularly projects like Solana versus Polkadot over the last few years. Polkadot has been almost invisible. Parity, particularly, an organization I worked for, because they took a stance to say, we want the community to drive for this ecosystem because we believe that's what regulators are looking for. And now we've seen greater regulatory clarity. You're seeing foundations start to be more active, start to host more events, start to speak more in public, start to fund more activities and initiatives that are maybe a little bit more in-house than outsourced and community-centric. The amount of time and money that has and momentum that has been lost in fear of regulation, it has probably slowed down. We probably doubled, tripled, or quadrupled the speed at which we're able to grow now because those shackles are off. So it's important for people to realize it's not just, oh, well, I can't trade a token on an exchange because it's not MiCA compliant. It's not that. It is much, much bigger. It is a ball and chain on every single component of go-to-market activity, and in some cases, technical activity and integrations for every protocol that's out there. So that's the unlock that we get with regulation. I want to talk a little bit about the second point, because you know what's changed in that time, or what's hindering mass adoption. In some cases, it is the ability to scale and grow that ecosystem, because you're able to provide the funding, the support, the engagement, as opposed to just saying, right, here's the technology, here's the SDKs, here's the content, you know, go figure it out yourself. Some of it has been regulatory clarity in digital assets. So particularly stablecoins, because I think stablecoins is going to be the first touch point that a number of organizations will engage with Web3, because they don't want 16 different billion tokens. Most applications that will engage with traditional finance industry will probably start with a stablecoin, go somewhere to a decentralized exchange. The token swaps or the various different activity that's required will happen on chain somewhere else outside of the application or outside of the boundary of the financial institution. Something will happen on the other side, and then it will come back in stablecoin form. Right? If you're a custodian, different story. But broadly speaking, if you can get stablecoins to work, then you can probably unlock most of the other applications. We don't have clear stablecoin regulation today. I have friends working in large banks who are building global payments, settlement, cross-border solutions, who have the technology ready but can't deploy it yet because they won't launch a product in a regulatory gray area. And so from that perspective, that's not the technology not being performant. That's not a lack of an ecosystem. That's not the tooling not being ready. That literally is, we can't launch a financial product because of regulatory clarity. That's probably thing one, specifically around decentralized finance and digital assets. That's the main rate limiting step. The second one goes deeper. And having engaged with enterprises or non-Web3 native businesses for the longest time, and it kind of links also to your point around why does everybody have a token? A lot of people don't understand how to make use of community-led growth and token economics to grow their proposition. And this is something that VeChain has done incredibly well with VBetta, something that I've looked at from afar and thinking, oh, that's clever. That's really useful. That's really simple. And it works. And people get it. Using blockchain for decentralized applications typically will mean you'll be offering tokens or NFTs or something to users, unless you fully obfuscate it and you're literally just using the blockchain as a ledger for recording transactions. The power of using dApps is shared economics, shared incentives, being able to offer tokens as loyalty and reward mechanisms. A lot of people in the traditional world don't know how to orchestrate those things. Or worse, they look at the competition in the industry as a zero-sum game. Somebody else has to lose for me to win. You saw some early consortia using private DLTs. You still see consortia on private instances of Avalanche or Polkadot. And what they have is a shared ledger. They have the use of tokens to represent things, but ultimately it's a little bit like a LAN party. And that's okay, right? And I'm not here to dump on anybody's ideas or the staging of their innovation, because that's still training wheels. They want to get comfortable with the integrations, with the implementations, with the automation, such that, you know, before it goes on chain into the wider ecosystem where the rest of the community can compose applications, where the rest of the community can engage with those tokens. They just want to make sure everything works. But the open economics, the open source, and the open community nature of Web3, these are not growth models or business models that the average executive has any experience of. And until we get to, I don't know whether it's tooling, whether it's learning, or whether it's just having enough of enough good examples saying, I want one of those, right? You go again, shameless plug, but you go over to VeChain and say, well, you've got a million people using Mugshot, and that's rewarding people for using reusable cups instead of paper cups every day. I could do with some of that, because I want to put those actions on my balance sheet. I want to be able to offset carbon credits, or I want to be able to offset my sustainable investment against that in exchange for tax benefits, or in exchange for compliance with certain requirements that I have to do as my industry. There's a ready-made app for that. And it's not complicated. It just offers rewards. I'm going to go and do a mugshot, right? Or I'm going to build an application like that, or EVEarn, right? Which looks at charging or rewarding people for charging their electric vehicles. I have an electric vehicle right here. You can't see it, it's off camera, but I have an electric motorcycle parked next to me. You know, I would love to be rewarded for charging my bike, and I'd very easily do it. And that's hugely powerful. If that was incentivized by the manufacturer to say, as part of that, you're going to become part of an electric motorcycle community. We're going to share ideas, routes, earn rewards for doing the right thing, taking pictures of potholes, whatever else it might be, right? You can put any kind of functionality into the app. Enterprises have been dying for years to engage with their users more regularly through what we used to call wallets, right? Back in the mid-2000s, everybody wanted to have a digital wallet. Everybody wanted to have a customer wallet where on a daily basis, you know, on your iPhone, you'd have a notification pop up, a nudge saying, oh, come back in. We want to sell you something. Or come back in. We want to engage with you for something. That was then subsequently replaced by Twitter, which has become a bit of a mess. We now have that next generation of consumer and user engagement, which can be open so that multiple people can deliver on it, interconnected so different users from different ecosystems can kind of come in and out. So like you've got air miles in multiple multiple ecosystems or air miles from multiple carriers, you can blend those together and you can start seeing cross-pollination of customers with similar values. The example on VBetter being that those are customers or users with sustainable values or people who want to better themselves or the planet. That is a very powerful and important group. And rather than saying, this is my Nike community, this is my Tesla community, and never the Twix shall meet, actually, we're going to be able to say, this is a community with common values, and we can bring them together on platforms and incentivize them to do different things. That is a hugely powerful growth engine. But that is so different to the market to somebody, sell them somebody, and try and hit them with a newsletter when they stay. That's the traditional model of marketing today. The short version is that people do not have the commercial and marketing engineering experience to do that well. And when we get that, when that becomes more visible, when people become more aware of those capabilities, you're going to see it absolutely fly out the door.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out VBetterDAO.com to find out more. And now, back to the show. This is like, this is a really good point, the idea of explaining open economics to Web2 style executives. So you have got a lot of experience with it. I think it's really important for a lot of projects to understand that this is not an easy sell. And we are, in a lot of ways, the converted, and we already believe in this technology. But if you're going to an executive with a large, you know, FTSE 500 company with 200 million users, it's like their base is their base and they don't want to share, and everyone outside of their base is a competitor, and they have loyalty points, like Web2 style loyalty points. This is always something that was projected as like the holy grail of a blockchain project. It was the idea of Web3 loyalty points. But then you go to, like, say, a Starbucks of the world and say, let's open this up. Let's say all the coffee shops can all plug in together. What's the typical response to that? And like, how do you sell the idea of opening their closed Web2 style loyalty system to other markets, like even competitors in some senses as well?
It depends on the industry and on the user. Right. And again, there are closed loop loyalty programs that are effective and efficient today. You know, Starbucks went down a bit of a journey with Polygon a couple of years ago. You know, they had a commercial collaboration to explore NFTs and rewarding users with tokens in exchange for going to coffee plantations or, you know, discounts to some extent. You really were just using the blockchain at that point for tallying up the rewards and maybe offering people some digital artwork that happened to be on a blockchain. These are not the foundations of a successful platform. This is replacing cloud with a blockchain and doing it a bit clunkier and in a way that probably the user experience was less streamlined than if you were just to use a regular loyalty program that's cloud and database and CRM centric. That doesn't move the needle. What I would start with is it depends a little bit on who you're talking to. Right. And I think there's two main personas for people who want to build on platforms like VBetter or who want to use or are considering using tokens and open economics for these things. Thing one is somebody who already has a user base, your FTSE 100 or your Fortune 500 example from before. I've already got 1 million customers, but I would like to engage them, surprise them, and delight them in ways that I can't today. And so I'm open to the idea of collaborating with others in my industry or adjacencies, and I'm going to have a really efficient system that sits underneath that, that is automated, autonomous, that settlement happens between different parties, and we have a token for that. Why? Thing one, you want the autonomous settlement so you don't have to do true-ups every month with your finance teams, which is a pain in the ass, slow, and frankly, zero value add. Why a token? Because you may be operating a global system that has different currencies in different jurisdictions, and you don't want to have to add the FX cost to your loyalty program because you're already spending money on the program, right? This is likely to be a marketing program. So in all intents and to all intents and purposes, you're probably spending money to deploy this in exchange for engagement and upsell or better customer intimacy in the long term. It may also be that if you get it right, that token may appreciate and have value because you're building a platform that multiple people want to come towards. And then you're essentially offsetting the cost because you're using a sort of decentralized Kickstarter. Right? That's the V-Better model. It doesn't work for everybody. It requires some thought, and it requires all of the usual market making and Web3 mechanics that, frankly, most enterprises would be scared to death of, or at least wouldn't have the experience to be able to deploy. So that's bonus points when you get to that part. But for the rest of it is about composability. So you've got a platform that people can plug into to offer those rewards and offer new things. Could be gated, could be entirely open. Doesn't, you know, it's up to the enterprise to say, okay, I only want this to be Newcastle United Football Club and our commercial partners. And we're going to offer token rewards or offer value rewards in exchange for hosting match day parties or in exchange for creating community content. And we're going to use the token as a means of rewarding people who could be anywhere in the world instead of having to worry about the issue of spending pounds and so on and so forth. This becomes a very efficient mechanism for maintaining that platform, that network, the relationship with partners and the engagement with users. That's why.
Makes sense.
That's the story to the people who have 1 million users already. The story to the person who has a vision but no users is a little bit different but related. You're saying, look, I've got a really good idea. I would like to help reduce the carbon footprint on the planet by encouraging people to, give you a mugshot example, have people use reusable cups and carry reusable cups with them. And, you know, I believe that's an important thing. I want to reward them, but at the moment I don't have any money, right? I don't have a marketing budget of $1 million. I'm literally one guy and an idea. I want to bring this idea to a community, in the technical term, a decentralized autonomous organization, or in this case, just a platform, right? Let's use human language. There's a platform called V-Better, and V-Better enables users of the platform to use some of the treasury from that platform for activities that will help do better in the world. And if the community love it and they vote for you, then they're going to fund you. So it's saying, actually, well, I can bootstrap and I can generate rewards for my community from a treasury of like-minded people. So I'm now part of a collective. I'm part of the platform. And that could be the platform that was previously formed by Starbucks or whoever it was, right? Or it could be a decentralized platform of people who want to do good and who have been supported by a treasury or by a philanthropic organization or by a layer one protocol. And the story to you is, come here, we've got a ready-made user base of people like you want to reach, and we can help you bootstrap and go faster. That's the two models. And in either case, it's not a conversation that works for everybody. But once you say those things and you describe the features in that way, it should become very obvious whether the person on the other side of the conversation is like, that's really cool, I get it, please, where do I sign? Or someone's like, hell no, heck no, that sounds awful complicated, I don't want any of your blockchains, please go away and leave me alone. I just want to go back to my simple life of, you know, paying Google ads and counting my money, right? That's those conversations only ever go one of two ways, real quick.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's you basically you're by the end of the conversation you're giving them effectively the red pill and the blue pill, right? And the ones that take the blue pill, they tend to come back and ask for the red pill 4 or 5 years later when they've kind of let it mature after enough time.
Yeah, I mean you're kind of giving that person a multivitamin or you're giving them Viagra. It's like, you know, well, you can take the multivitamin, it's fine, and, you know, you'll be okay. Life will go on as normal, but if you take this, you're in for a good time. You're in for nothing but growth. Sorry, it's a terrible analogy.
Wow, yeah. That's getting clipped.
But you
up.
Started it, don't worry.
The one-liner, I love the one-liner.
The pill analogy from before, but yeah. One of these will deliver you surprising growth, and the other will just lead you back to your normal life.
You definitely work in marketing. I love it. Yeah, it's kind of similar to the idea of like, you start with, do you... You know, the classic, sell me this pen. The first question is, are you in the market for a pen? How long have you been in the market for a pen? And asking these questions actually kind of answers the question, are they interested in doing something a bit disruptive, or are they the monopoly that has nothing to gain because they've got everything right now? And they're not going to be the ones that want to be disruptive. Like the Starbucks of the world, they tried it with Odyssey. I know that project didn't go down too well because like the value prop wasn't really there, right? They had two tokens, their traditional loyalty points, and then the idea of this Web3 token, and people didn't really understand what each of the tokens did, and like the UX was awful. And I think it's kind of, you really need to understand, does this add value for me as a company? Will it add value for my end user? And if the answer is no to those two questions, you're obviously not going to go with it.
That project should have died on paper. That's the that's the sad fact of life, is that a lot of the likely success of these projects could have been conceived in a business meeting or in a room with a simulation and never needed to have seen the light of day. And that's also the slightly sad part, is the tech was never the failure in pretty much every case where something doesn't go according to plan in Web3. It wasn't that, okay, we do have smart contract hacks and exploits and so on and so forth, but broadly speaking, when it comes to applications, the reason why the initiatives didn't grow in the way that people expected them to is that they didn't take the time to plan out the growth path and the value proposition clearly enough at the beginning. And all of that failure was entirely avoidable. I'm not saying that, you know, some people weren't surprised along the way, something didn't go as planned, the launch wasn't great, the execution wasn't perfect, partners pulled out, regulation got in the way, lawyers got in the way, all, you know, other contributing factors. But broadly speaking, if you can determine the success or failure of a decentralized project on paper very quickly before you need to get anywhere near building expensive technology.
Yeah. Do you know what, Andy, I want to, because this is really interesting how you framed this, you know, the different paths to adoption through the companies, right? Through companies with either, you know, a guy with a vision who wants to build something and, you know, crowdfund that platform through an organic user base, or it's an existing institution that you're trying to give them the red pill, right? So,
or
the blue pill, yeah, depending on which way they want to go. But so, I guess there's an underlying assumption here, because I think for some people, there, when we talk about mass adoption of crypto, 5, 6, 7 years ago, there was some people who thought one day the light bulb's going to flick on, everyone in the world is going to just get the value proposition of Bitcoin, crypto, etc., right? And that's how we're going to get mass adoption. I think the assumption you're making here, if I'm right, is that that's unrealistic. We've kind of, you know, Bitcoin's had a long time to play out and crypto's had a long time to play out. You have to use the existing economy to get us there, right? So can you talk to, like, is that a fair assumption? And, you know, do you think that it was ever a valid dream to have kind of everyone understand it? Or do you think, like, technically and fundamentally, this technology is just too kind of self-involved for that realization to have happened for everyone on the planet at the same time, kind of thing?
That's a really nice way of framing it. Is Web3 too self-involved? Yeah. I think there's a few different things. Firstly, I would separate Bitcoin from everything else. So I think Bitcoin established itself as a digital asset that is unique in nature. It is a digital store of value, digital gold. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why it's not being used for payments, because it's akin to a long-term investment, like a pension. And people don't pay for coffees with their pension, right? The opportunity cost, you know, if I said, you know what, I really fancy a Ford Escort XR3i, and it's a really shiny, nice one that's been well maintained, and it's going to cost me 50 grand. You know what? I'll sell a bit of Bitcoin and I'll go buy that Ford Escort XR3i. I don't know why I went with that as an example, but let's stick with it. And I'm like, you know what? This is great. I'm really happy with this XR3i and I'm driving it around and it's great. And I'm still slowly over month on month watching the Bitcoin price appreciate as it might. And one day suddenly my XR3i has an opportunity cost of $6 million. I was like, why did I, you know, sell an appreciating asset, or what I assume to be an appreciating asset, for a depreciating asset? Because I drive very badly and Ford's rust, and you know, now I have a shitbox of a car and no Bitcoin left. This is the conundrum with Bitcoin, right? Why people often don't use it for payments, because it's scarce. It is designed to be a scarce resource, and it's not designed to be everyday stable fiat equivalent, which is how we get into stable coins and so on and so forth. So I want to separate Bitcoin from blockchains, because I do believe it's a different reasoning, it's a different argument. Bitcoin has been adopted by the financial services industry as digital gold, or as a digital asset that stores value. That is, you know, there's some value that you can price into that around it being portable, around it being secure, about it being transparent. There's a bunch of things that you can say about Bitcoin that are nice, that make it a kind of interesting thing for the financial services industry, but broadly people are kind of okay with it. Enough people have bought into the idea of Bitcoin that it retains its value. The exact same is true of the dollar, by the way, or you know, the Vietnamese dong, or the Aussie dollar. Right? If everybody suddenly thought that Australia was doomed and is going to hell and had been taken over by zombies, watch how quickly people would get rid of the Australian dollar and it would go to zero. Not saying that I'm expecting the zombie apocalypse in Australia anytime soon, but were that to happen, and you know, the global economic system suddenly lost faith in Australia, go straight to zero. Same could happen with Bitcoin. Everything is a belief system. Everything is a Ponzi if you zoom out far enough. Back to blockchains and decentralized infrastructure. I think a lot of people in our industry understand the potential of self-sovereignty of assets, of not being dependent on a third party to manage your assets, on not being able to be defrauded, on not having a third party shut down your infrastructure, or for your application to run by the community, or to be engaged with a like-minded group of people for a common cause, or investing behind an idea, which is the decentralized Kickstarter model. Again, most meme coins today are an illustration of attracting capital to an idea. That idea just happens to be a frog or poop, right?
Or Doge, which is now a very successful project, right? Like
Exactly that. So that's the realization that people have had, of saying, wow, a world like this would be fabulous. And we get it. And we just have to decentralize everything. And you know, we're just going to keep building tools and applications and block explorers and things to help people who love and believe in this vision. And you know, one day the world will be a better place. And the limiting factor on that is that the experience we have day to day and the applications we use day to day are not typically built by these people. Those apps are built by organizations, by enterprises, by supermarkets, by car manufacturers, by whoever it is. That's the digital experience, the digital lived experience of the internet today, that in order to achieve that Web3 vision needs to transform. And I've spent 10 years of my career in digital transformation. It takes a minimum of a year and a half to launch an application to a million customers that is worth its salt and integrated back into a large organization. It takes a minimum of 4 years to replace the core banking system of a bank with another core banking system that is like the old one, but a little bit better, right? And they're still running some old stuff and some crap tech from the 1970s that's built on COBOL that you just can't rip out, because you know the meme, right? Where you've got this kind of tower of nonsense all stacked up and there's like one guy in Colorado who's propping it all up. That is actual. And there is some transaction system somewhere that just cannot be ripped out and will never be replaced. And that's just how it is. And then you've got humans that get in the way, right? The CEOs of companies dictate the technology roadmap. CIOs to some extent as well. But if that CEO has a bias towards a particular type of technology or a particular enterprise systems integrator, they will hire the people they like and they'll build the stuff they want because they're in charge. They don't have any obligation to support the idea of decentralizing everything. Blockchain has no predestined requirements to be adopted. It has to demonstrate value, and then it has to go through the process of digital transformation to fit into the world we have today. And so it's not about Web3 being the place where everybody has to get to. It's not about Web3 adoption. It's about us meeting the rest of the world where they are and making use of the technology capabilities that we have to improve their lives, their businesses, their communities. That's what it's about. And a lot of people in Web3 have been sheep-dipped into believing that we need Web3 adoption. What we really need is Web2 transformation.
I like that. That's a powerful message. Like, you're obviously a good storyteller. How much do you think like narrative comes into these projects as well? Like, you know, Steve Jobs is a massive proponent of the idea you don't sell the product, you sell like the vision and the why, not the what exactly. And like you said there, Bitcoin, you know, it started off as an electronic peer-to-peer payment system. That was the original goal. I don't know whether the narrative formed it or it formed the narrative. It's now digital gold, which obviously all the cats in Wall Street understand. They're like, oh yeah, it's just what I already do, but slightly more digitized. And they love that. That makes sense. And then you see the performance of Ethereum. It's like the Web3 settlement layer. You're like, what the hell does that mean? Even I'm not entirely sure what that means, let alone someone on Wall Street. Like, how much does narrative come into this? I understand that value propositions are really important, especially like when we can get really ephemeral about these things. And it's like, okay, what's privacy? Like, do you care about privacy? Does your average person actually care about control and, you know, authenticity and privacy and all this kind of stuff? But like, what do you think is the value of narrative for projects in like a really understandable and digestible way?
I think the way you communicate the value of what you do to the people you're trying to reach is critical for success in every possible way. It's not everything, it's not the be all and end all, but it is important. And Web3 or blockchain has had a narrative problem from the get-go. Because in most cases, they let the engineers name the stuff, right? So you had nodes and smart contracts and decentralized applications, right? And technology that is immediately imposing, immediately. And so a lot of the terminology that you see blockchain projects go out with is designed towards other blockchain projects or other blockchain teams who understand what you're talking about. We are going to offer decentralized, fully autonomous, AI agentic, yield-bearing, autonomous farm-based derivatives of synthetic NFTs that have pictures of monkeys.
There's right? a little acronym somewhere that's like hullabaloo, and it's like, what?
Or an even more simple example of it is that people just use the term decentralized and assume that everybody assumes that's good. Yeah. Right? And every time you see the word decentralized used as a positive, I challenge anybody I ever work with to say, should that word be in there? Does it actually, is it good because it's decentralized, or is it good because it does other things or the impact that it has? And so, you know, it's powered by Ethereum, decentralized, blockchain enabled, tokenized, right? Mm-hmm. We lose out on explaining the benefit because we go into the shorthand, right? NFTs. For the longest time, non-fungible tokens. I mean, frankly, firstly, it makes most people think of mushrooms. you know, everybody else's reference to fungible is not unique or swappable. It's fungus. Do I have a token that's not made of fungus? And tokenization also, right? The idea of a token, most people understand, you know, tokens for operating machinery, tokens for operating games. But again, it's not really common language most of the time. So we've created these complex things. And we went so far down the road of the use cases with NFTs that NFTs are now synonymous with the idea of pictures of monkeys. And so if somebody says, I've got this NFT project, immediately somebody's going to assume you're building digital art. And so we had to rebrand. And so we've ended up with real world assets because the rest of the blockchain world is unreal, right? It's, you know, why is it real world now? Why can't it just be digital assets? And what is a digital asset? And so on. You get into these complex domains of pseudo-finance or pseudo-finance and technology. And we create these shorthands because it's easy for us, because you need to, you know, not use a whole bunch of copy when you're writing tweets. Or it's easy to brand stuff, or people prefer to brand stuff. And that creates interpretation, or that creates bias, and as a result, it challenges people's understanding. I still think in Web3, there is a huge amount of room for us to just say what things do and use human language in doing so. You know, VBetter is a platform with a number of applications that help people to become rewarded for sustainable actions. If you're doing sustainable things, we're going to reward you for doing it. And VBetter is a platform where you can do that. We will reward you in tokens. There's a currency of this ecosystem, and those tokens reward you, and you can exchange those tokens for things. You can use that to pay for stuff in store using your Stellar Pay card. You can swap that for other things if you want to. It has a value, and so we can value that. We can present a dollar amount, a euro amount, a US, you know, EUD amount, whatever it could be. That's a simple-ish proposition, right? Midnight, my previous project. We have a blockchain platform that can allow you to have programmable privacy. You can select what to have be public and what to have be private. That sounds useful. What do I use it for? And then the conversation continues, right? Yeah. As opposed to saying, you know, we are a zero knowledge proof blockchain with programmable privacy, making use of a dual ledger system and a dual token economics, which allows you to, right? Some people will love that. The people who are already in the industry, the people who are already building, there is a narrative for them. There is a narrative for people who are technical in nature. And what you put in your developer documents and your community newsletters is not the same thing you put on your website, or not the same thing that you talk about to application builders. And the challenging thing about Web3 from a marketing perspective, it is harder in Web3 than anywhere else, because you have more stakeholders. The flywheel of an ecosystem includes the founders, investors, protocol developers, and that, you know, that's not necessarily the core team. That could also be third parties or external protocol developers, app developers, and app users, and institutions, and third-party integrations. Yeah, right. And every one of those individuals requires a different tone of voice, different message, and different data to be able to make a decision on whether or not your ecosystem is a good thing or not. And so I think the challenge with a lot of Web3 teams, it's not that they necessarily are too self-involved, to come back to the original question that you asked about half an hour ago, Jack. It's that they only have one tone of voice, or they have only one persona that they are communicating to, and it is the 100,000 angry degens on Twitter, not necessarily the rest of the world.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I'm fully on board with this your kind of criticisms of how narratives have been used in the future. Like I watched NFTs, you know, rise as a concept a couple of years ago, and I knew the concept from years before, and I thought, yeah, that's boring, it's just a classification of tokens, and someone had given it the name, they'd put fungible in there, which is not a word you have any cause to use in any other walk of life any other time. And then I honestly think it just stuck because NFT is like it's the right initialism to use, and it's catchy enough that people could get it. I've heard of that. It's like if you put that in a headline, you can remember it. And then it started to, you know, you had all the celebrities and everything. But yeah, it's a really challenging thing to nail down the value proposition. And I think you've identified that one of the key things that I think most people miss is the fact that the value proposition might be different to different audiences, right? Even if there's a core underlying through line between that in those value propositions, you need to frame it completely differently to different audiences. And you know, so now we're on the kind of topic of marketing and everything as well. I'd also like to get into, you know, the new update with you, your role at VeChain. So, you know, marketing director at VeChain, I really want to, like, instead of just talking about the abstract, I want to talk about the day to day. So can you tell us, you know, why did you move? What's the thinking behind the new role? I think everyone would be interested to know.
Well, thank you for asking, and thank you for the shameless plug again, if it wasn't already obvious. So looking from afar, and if you look at projects that you want to work for, I mean, it's not been very many days so far, right? So I'm in week four now, I think, of my my time here. I've not had that many days, but many, if not all, of the things that I observed from the outside are true, and very many other benefits and exciting things about this ecosystem have come to me subsequently. And let me try and maybe run it down as to, you know, when you spend more time than not working, and working in Web3 for a project tends to be all hours. Not necessarily because there's too much work, but just because your mind's in it and it's international and it's remote and there's lots of different factors to it. But when you spend that much time and energy on a project, you want to feel like you're surrounded by like-minded people, that you have a clear purpose and a clear direction of travel, that you are working with exciting people, projects, and partners, that there's room to grow for a bunch of reasons. And looking from the outside, VeChain does a bunch of that. And also that you can work for a project that doesn't require you to have worked on Wall Street for 25 years to understand what it is that you actually do. Because I didn't, and I haven't. I consider myself to be modestly intelligent and somewhat experienced. But there's a whole tranche of the world of DeFi that has even more complicated terminology and products and systems and swaps and derivatives and synthetic this and decentralized autonomous that, that frankly, I would be lost and I wouldn't enjoy. And so looking for a project that has all of those factors and you can see real world benefit for what they're doing, the list of potential projects is actually very, very short when you start going through that list of criteria. And so obviously there was familiar people, Antonio, Sonny, and a few others in the team who I've worked with before or have kind of met across the way. You look at the real world impact of, is anyone actually using this, right? Over 8 million wallets, 1.7 million users on VBetter, right? 1.7 million people on a regular basis, you know, if not daily, using applications like Mugshot, like EV Earn, like Green Cart, that every day people are making use of blockchain technology and not necessarily realizing it. That they only may start getting a hint of it when you say, well, when I get my rewards, do I want to stake them or do I want to keep them? Right? Do I want to invest them? Do I want to hold them and do nothing with them? Right. For the rest of the time, the UX is basically like it would be in any other application, which is hugely powerful. They've been shipping code like mad, and shout out to Antonio and the rest of the development team, because I know these guys work hard. They're delivering incredibly well. And they were, you know, top three in the GitHub, you know, code commits charts back end of last year, probably also some point this year. They are absolutely shipping, which shows that there's still protocol innovation, still updates, upgrades. There's a program called Renaissance, which is underway now. Stargate being the next major milestone in July, where there's going to be a significant upgrade to the staking and decentralization of the protocol. So it's going to become more rewarding to hold VET, to stake VET, and a whole bunch of new classifications around the nodes and how you stake with NFTs. There's that NFT word again. That is unique in the world of staking blockchains. Two token model, similar to Midnight, predated Midnight, two token model before Midnight, which has governance token and a gas token separated. So you don't have that confliction of the requirement for the get the voting and security token to go up to increase the cost of attacking the blockchain, but then also at the same time increasing the cost of transacting on it. That's not very practical. And literally 95% of blockchains have this problem, if not more. So it's designed for real world usage. And you look at the partnerships, I get the interesting juxtaposition of VBetter and then partnerships with the UFC. Or, you know, Dana White more broadly as an advisor, incredibly successful businessman, incredibly well respected, knows how to make stuff grow. He's kind of introduced partners like 4Ocean that work on ocean plastics. Mm-hmm. As you can probably tell, I spend a bit of my time in the ocean. And so working with teams like that is hugely, hugely interesting for me. And then as a marketeer, you've got the juxtaposition of sustainability and getting punched in the face. And so actually you're thinking about boiling down, what is it about the UFC? What is it about the fitness community? What is it about people who go through difficult times to succeed, that has resonance, not just the UFC audience, but has resonance with VBetter and the apps that exist on VBetter that are helping people to earn through sustainable actions or earn through other means. New apps coming soon to the ecosystem that will definitely appeal to the fitness community. I'm not going to release too much now, but there's a lot. Add that all up. Great team, really passionate people all over the world, guys in Hong Kong, Singapore, Italy, East Coast, West Coast, Portugal, UK, Ireland. It's a really decentralized group of people. And you can tell that despite all the success to date, despite all of where they are now, there's still a huge amount of room to grow. And honestly speaking, I don't think there's a better project in Web3 from a personal perspective for me right now. If you were to give me my wish list, that's all it. And I'm really, really excited. And I hope, for the sake of the VFAM, for the people looking in from the outside, for anybody who follows the show, that resonates with them and that I can do a good job representing them when I talk about why we're doing certain things, what we're doing, and why it's exciting. When I talk to others and bring people in and say, you know, you should check out VBetter. This is a really great place for you to launch your application. Or you should look at VeChain. This is going to be a really rewarding year for the VeChain community. I hope people give me the patience and the understanding. And the great news is I'm only on LinkedIn. So people can yell at me there. So please, Twitter people, be kind. Or please try to come over to LinkedIn and be constructive. We try to foster positive dialogue and get really excited about each other's career achievements. But yeah, I'm excited to help play a role in this next phase of growth with all of the other amazing people that are doing so.
Well, very excited to have you on the podcast talking about it. I imagine this is the first podcast you've done since the announcement. You know, it's always an interesting one, like the UFC combined with like VBear DAO. And, you know, I know Sonny quite well. I remember speaking to him, I was like, what is the link there? Why did you choose the UFC? And he was like, well, I wanted to, you know, be part, like join an organization or partner with an organization that transcended back their borders, transcended language. And it was like, the two options are sport and music. And he was like, you know, music's been done, so let's go with sport. And he's like, what's one of the fastest, most entertaining sports going right now? And obviously you look at the UFC, like their online social metrics is unbelievable. Dana White is an absolute expert at kind of raising the profile of companies like this. So it made sense. Like, he really did explain it. I think it's such a cool partnership. It's such a cool company for VeChain to work with. And obviously VeChain's great. Like, we've had a lot of the team on here, like Antonio, Sonny, Johnny, lots of people, Piero recently, and now you. And I think you're joining at such like a perfect time. There's so much happening at VeChain right now. Obviously VBetterDAO kicking off, the Renaissance kicking off, the even like the AI strategy kicking off. There's so many different things happening. So you couldn't have joined at a busier, maybe more momentous time. Very happy to have you here. I think that, you know, we've talked about 45 minutes now. It's been an absolutely thrilling conversation. A lot of that talk has been about the past. I'd like just to spend like the last question talking about the future. So we've talked about all the bugbears, all the issues, all the lack of growth and kind of maturity in the space. What does the future hold, do you think? You can talk about like for Web3 at large or VeChain specifically. What's the 5-year outlook? Obviously, the last 2 years has been crazy in terms of like the adoption of like institutions, enterprises, even countries. What do you think the next 5 years holds for the space?
Gosh, it's kind of everybody overestimates what can be done in 5 years, but underestimates what can be done in 10. I think kind of half that in crypto, in terms of the speed at which things progress. And I mean, the nice thing is when you're working with everything being mostly digital, you can move faster. I've said to most people, any application, any transformation that requires any physical infrastructure, movement of goods, tokenization of Lambos, right? If you want to tokenize a Lambo, where is the Lambo? Is it in a warehouse? Is it drivable? Does the engine work? Does it still have the wheels? Has it had a service, right? There's a whole bunch of different challenges even with something as simple as that. But the nice thing about the large majority of Web3 is that it is a natively digital industry, global, remote, and as a result, it can move fast, which is nice. If I look at what's coming next, I think undeniably you've got to start with, we see positive, clear regulation on digital assets that allows businesses to launch, grow, raise funding and cross borders in a easy, predictable, and easy to understand way. So you take off the shackles. You remove the shackles of uncertainty. You remove the shackles of fear of regulation, and you allow integration of digital assets with traditional industries. Again, it's not a uniquely US thing. Switzerland, Hong Kong, Singapore, guys have been on this for years, but that becomes more pervasive. Europe also with Mika to some extent. That's going to make things easier, faster, better. So capital can flow, businesses can launch, ideas can scale. That's going to be thing one. Thing two is how quickly the rest of the world catches up with the ideas that we talked about on the show. It's not going to be simple for people to immediately start adopting the idea of open ecosystems, open economics, token-based incentives, decentralized growth models. Those are things that are still complex. And so I don't necessarily think that there is an accelerant for that, save for more applications launching and more people saying, I want one of those. And I think it was very similar with e-commerce in the early days, as you had some of the first e-commerce platforms were awful, clunky, miserable. But then it's like, well, if you can sell that on the internet, well, I can sell pet food on the internet and I can raise money for selling pet food on the internet. And because the business case was clear enough. In some cases, it wasn't, and people were idiots spending money on stuff that clearly had no value. But that will still happen. But, you know, VCs will be okay at the end of the day. Or, you know, the decentralized Kickstarter model becomes hugely powerful and you start seeing crowdsourced communities, applications, and funding that grow faster because they're, you know, you have a community baked in. Kickstarter has proven the model. We just need to say we're Kickstarter for asking people not to use paper cups every day, or we are Kickstarter for helping you to shop organically and lose weight, or whatever else it could be. Yeah. So allowing capital to align around ideas and allowing developments to grow. The challenge will be, or sorry, another accelerator will be having non-Web3 native developers take on these tools or these methods, because these guys will be very good at app building, but they might not necessarily be great at the idea of Web3 or the integrations around Web3. That goes away over time with SDKs and integrations. And so the requirements to be Web3 native becomes less. The ability to have a great idea or a great application allows that to be more accessible. And so you see more non-Web3 native teams building applications that solve problems that make use of decentralized Kickstarter, community voting, transparency, tokenization and automation through smart contracts. All the digital capabilities we've talked about that are the building blocks of whatever the thing is that somebody wants to build. I think you're still going to see abhorrent uses of the technology in application form, rug pulls, scandalous behavior on chain. You're still going to see North Korea and others trying to hack treasuries because that's a really interesting way of robbing banks these days. And that will be part of the journey, like it or not. But again, in most cases, the bumps along the way that we've seen in Web3 were never failures of the technology. They were failures of humans. They were failures of governance. They were failures of due process or financial responsibility. The technology has always survived. VeChain's been up for 10 years and has never been hacked. Cardano, the same. Many other chains will say, we have had 100% uptime and no downtime. Some go down on a weekly basis, but you know that's okay. They're working on it. But broadly speaking, you know, you have outages in cloud. Let's not just kind of dump on everybody because they make a mistake. And I think the other important thing I want people to take away as they look forward is that we are going to make iterations of use of this technology that will be a bit shit. And don't lose faith because it didn't work the first time. Take the lessons and do better next time, or wait for the next version. We wouldn't have RWAs if we didn't have NFTs. That sounds like a horrible sentence to say out loud, but broadly speaking, people wouldn't have learned to tokenize things on the Ethereum blockchain if we didn't start with CryptoKitties and digital art. We now have securities, commodities, and large financial institutions using the same technology because we've created design patterns and SDKs that make it easier for them. But we started small. We started with something easy or something digital, something silly, because it was fun or because it was engaging or it allowed us to scale. So my parting message is, don't get upset when the first iteration doesn't work and say, oh, this technology is doomed. It'll never work because CryptoKitties was congested and the Ethereum blockchain was expensive. Okay, so you're telling me that some of it worked, but some of it didn't. What if we fix the other bits? Is it still useful then? Don't shit on anybody's idea because it may just be the first iteration of the next best thing that comes along.
I really love that outlook because I think it also speaks to how far this industry has probably come, right? It's an industry that was built on all those buzzwords, they're applied all the time, like decentralization, immutability, nothing can change, code is law, right? It's these like permanent concepts around the blockchain industry, when in fact it's some of the best parts of the existing world, right? The idea of rapid innovation, iteration, building on, you know, we're basically, the industry is brute forcing out everything that doesn't work very, very quickly and faster than most industries. So yeah, I think that's a really nice way to look at it. And Anthony, there's so many things we could chew on here, I think we're going to have to get you back at some point in the future if you'd like to join us. But yeah, it's been a great conversation. We've really loved having you. Thank you for joining us.
I've enjoyed it. I hope it did feel like a conversation rather than a monologue, but I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you for asking good questions and giving me the chance to shameless plug. Do keep your eyes on VeChain. We've got a lot planned for this year. I hope a lot of it is exciting for you guys and that the work that I get to do is impactful and people get to enjoy it. So thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anthony. And all that's left to say is to those listening at home, thank you for listening. You can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.